everyone, and welcome to Sermon Smith. This is show number two. Sermon Smith is a conversation with church leaders about the craft of sermon preparation. I'm really excited about today. I have my good friend Steve Carter with us today. Steve, say hi.
Hey, how's it going, everyone?
So, Steve, why don't you tell us about your context. Tell us about where it is that you do the teaching and preaching that you do.
Yeah, so for the last 10 months, I've been at Willow Creek Community Church in Barrington, Illinois, and my primary teaching has come on Wednesday nights at our midweek service. And so I'm on a team that kind of sets up the whole teaching arc, and then I teach there maybe once or twice a month. And that's kind of a deeper study into a text. So we're preparing for Colossians. Last one that we did was the book of Acts. And so that's every week just kind of taking apart a chunk of scripture. And then from time to time, when asked, I'll teach on the weekends. And that's a little bit different. That's more around not just diving into the text and unpacking it, but more about, let me tell you about this idea and how this idea can really help you as you move along in your journey of faith.
Yeah. Which of those do you enjoy more?
That's a great question. They're so different. I mean, the Lakeside Auditorium, that room just feels so feels like family. I've been doing that room more. I'm getting to know those people. I feel you've got the 20-somethings crew in that room, but then you also have the Willow Creek core that have just been a part of that community since day one at the theater. So yeah, there really is just this. You're speaking to the core, and you're watching them dive into the text, and that, I mean, they're the leaders of our church, so that's a really, really fun thing. But then just the energy that comes at 11:15 service when that auditorium is packed out, they're just two different things, and I think I love both of them uniquely, but it's two different types of study prep.
Yeah, yeah. Well, before we go further into what your whole process looks like, let's talk a little bit. I think you have a unique backstory from most. And so why don't you tell a little bit about how you even got into this whole preaching thing?
Definitely. I'm sure many people can say this, but I didn't see this really as my career. I was a film major at Cal State Fullerton University. And during my sophomore year of college, my dad actually became a follower of Jesus and felt called to move from California to Grand Rapids, Michigan. And so we sold everything and we moved out there. And there was a church that had been started a few months earlier called Mars Hill Bible Church. And I had learned about this through my best friend Tommy, who actually was a part of Lake Avenue Church. And Rob Bell had been like a youth intern while he went to Fuller there. And so Tommy said, hey, you got to find this guy named Rob. He's really, really quirky. I think you're going to like him. It's churches like Mars something. And so we started looking online. We found that it met in a homeschool building, which still to this day is funny that homeschool students have a building. But we showed up and the whole area was packed. Cars on the side of the road. I mean, kids in skateboards and rollerblades, like being your greeters and parking team. And the first three times we showed up, we were turned away by a fire marshal. And so finally I snuck in and walked up to Rob and told him that I knew Tommy. And he right away just said, hey, well, let's hang out. Let's go grab some lunch. And so he and I just started connecting, and he got me plugged in. And one thing led to another where I was like, I want to do this. And he had this phrase that he would say over, let's change the world one West Michigan at a time. And I felt like I wanted to be a part of that. I wanted to take what I was learning here and bring that to some other part of the country. And my desire for the scriptures and teaching was just catapulting within, and my desire for film was just gently fading away.
Hmm. And so what's happened in the in-between, you know, that season and now?
So I after 9 months of just kind of seeing this, I really felt like, man, I want to do this. So I went back to California. There was a school right next to Cal State Fullerton called Hope International University. And I jumped right in there, did a biblical studies with an emphasis on preaching. I interned at a church called Rock Harbor in Costa Mesa with their teaching team. And when I graduated, maybe a month or 2 months before I graduated from college, Rob had gone to Turkey and Israel with a guy by the name of Ray Vanderlaan. And Ray had said, hey, it's great that you speak to the masses. Jesus spoke to the masses, but he didn't change the world by the masses. He changed the world by pouring his life into a few disciples. And he just looked at Rob and his wife and just said, who are you two pouring your life into? And Rob and Kristen kind of looked at each other and they didn't have an answer. And so on the plane ride home, according to Rob, they just started to pray. And my name and another came up. And so they got back and they called both of us and said, hey, do whatever you can. Get here as soon as you can. Rob opened up his basement to me, and I moved there right after I graduated and spent a year as an intern. They hired me as a junior high pastor. And then a couple years into it, I was overseeing Cradle through college. And then we had had our first, and Grand Rapids has to be the second most gray area, cloudy area in the country behind Seattle. And my wife is from Arizona, and she was like, hey, it might be nicer to be a little closer to family and in a place that has a little bit more sunshine. And so Rock Harbor invited us out to for me to be an associate teaching pastor. So no leadership, no meetings, no managing staff. It was just an office filled with books and teaching about 2 to 3 times a month. And so we jumped on that opportunity and did that. And then also served as a campus pastor for about 4 years before coming to Willow 10 months ago.
I also married a woman from Arizona and lived in a great place. And they don't last long. They don't like it.
Yeah.
Thus the trek from Seattle to Austin. All right. Well, as you said, you know, you're part of a team. I know that Willows doesn't follow the lectionary. So I'm curious, how does it work for you, as much as you have say in it, but even overall for the team, how do you guys think through what are we going to preach? How do you guys schedule out and calendar the topics, both for Sunday mornings and for Wednesday nights?
So for Wednesday nights, we've got a professor from Wheaton, Dr. Gary Burge, and then our director of discipleship, Shane Farmer, and myself. And the three of us, there's a great little restaurant called The Lucky Monk. And usually a few months before a series, we're going to sit with each other and just kind of saying, hey, what's God stirring in you and any desire for a book? Gary's a New Testament scholar, so that's always helpful to have someone
sure, yeah.
throw out an idea. And somehow he's already, oh, you could outline it like da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know. And Shane just brings a formation voice. Well, this is how it could look if our community actually got to it. And I just eat food and see. It's fun. So actually next Wednesday morning, Gary and I are meeting, and we're going to just talk through this Colossians series, how to break it down. Now, the interesting thing about Wednesday nights for us is – it's our next steps for everything in the church. So we start off with worship together, but then recovery will break after worship will go to recovery. Alpha class out of worship. And so the host will say the announcements and then dismiss people. And if you want to stay in the Lakeside Auditorium, we're going to go through the book of Colossians. And so maybe about 800 people leave and then, you know, a couple thousand will stay, to teaching. So for us, it's really trying to, 8 week slot, figure out how to do that. I think for the weekend, it's really solely driven by Bill and what's God doing in him, what he feels our community needs to hear. And he just has a question, what will serve the congregation the best? And so that becomes the thing. He'll throw out a couple of ideas and just say, gang, which one do we do? And so kind of really, even though he has a ton of desire, he really tries to be a multiplier and letting the team speak in, and then we go from there.
Yeah. So, and then the schedule's made, you know, for the topics and then, you know, assigned. So typically how far in advance do you know that you're going to teach?
Yeah. So I know I'm teaching all the way through the end of the year.
You know, and so you typically know 4, 5, 6 months out when you'll be teaching and on what?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that is such a blessing. And that's, you know, that's how Rob oriented his whole schedule in Mars. And, you know, when I went to hang out with Rob, I literally thought I was going to find a secret vault of books. And what I realized is he's reading a lot of the same books that I was told to read in college. The thing that he does different is he just sits with the text longer and he asks better questions. And I think when you have time that you're able to do that, and that's a gift, knowing, oh, I'm up six times, you know, on midweek, this week, and I know which text I'm doing, I can just live in that story.
Yeah. Well, let's you know, maybe in your mind isolate one that you've done recently or you're about to do, and let's just work back from the day that that text is assigned to you. What happens?
Great. So for me, I'm teaching this weekend on main stage, and it kicks off our Together series, which in many ways is the first real community series that we've done at Willow. This is what someone told me for, you know, 5 or 6 years. So, it feels like a big deal. And then in many ways, we've got this desire for a small groups push that we're starting in 4 or 5 weeks. So trying to use this message, to really be a catalyst for, people joining small groups. So the first thing for me, since I've only been here 10 months, is to kind of think about the context. Who am I speaking with? Why aren't people in small groups? Why are people in small groups? And so I'm just trying to understand my audience from that standpoint. If it was Wednesday night, it would just be, here's what the text says. But I'm just trying to understand that. And then I'm just trying to figure out, okay, where did the phrase that we're using, where did that come from? So talking with our discipleship director, and the word together, and obviously that came from Acts 2, which has been so huge to the story of Willow. And so I find myself just looking at that section, and I start asking questions. And I try to study that word. What does that word mean? I try to see it in the context. And the big thing for me came out of a conversation. And so I'll have like multiple conversations with people trying to learn about the context of where I'm speaking. And I was telling them the church was going from 120 to 3,000. 120 hiding in an upper room to 3,000 people. And my friend's really logistics minded. And he was like, that sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah.
Like, how do they do that? And that just triggered something in me to go, well, the scripture says that they just did these four things and they were together and they ate together, but they didn't have any database. They didn't have any like neighborhoods. Like they didn't have like, who was the person who got up and was like, okay, your group of friends. Okay. You're going to eat together. You're going to eat. Like, how did they organize this? And so that started to really do something inside me where I was trying to think, well, then why would they have that approach? Why would they believe that being together was so much better? What happened in that upper room? What happened in walking with Jesus? And so it's almost like free thinking and free writing. I just start writing, start journaling, start looking at other, you know, passages of scriptures in the Gospels and looking at some of the things that Paul wrote, because there is this redemptive arc. Paul will take it from Acts 2 where it's, you know, basically Jewish converts to a place of Ephesians 2, where it's Jews and Gentiles. So there was some progressive movement that was happening, but at that point, why were they able to open up their homes? What was it about the way of Jesus that was so compelling? So that's how it starts. Tons of questions in that regard.
So you're talking particularly about one where you're assigned a topic. Sometimes you do a text. Generally, though, it sounds like once you had a topic, you wanted to guide it toward a particular text. Is that how you tend to operate?
Totally, 100%. I just, for me, and this was something Rock Harbor's teaching pastor, Mike Erie, I mean, he was a master at this, but he constantly would just push. Don't bring an idea and try to proof text it, you know, to make it fit your idea. If it's not in the text, don't say it. Like, it's just, he just had this thing about him. And so oftentimes I'd go, hey, you know, I feel like this is what's happening in this story. And he'd say, that is, go, keep doing it, keep chasing it. Other times I'd say, is this what's happening here? And he's like, no, that's the wrong passage. Go to this one. And so for me, I just want it to be grounded in the scripture. And my job, I think, is to help people see and draw out what was really taking place to the best of our knowledge, and how the decisions and the choices and the willingness to follow Jesus got us to where we are today.
Yeah. So it sounds like once you have a text selected that you're going to focus on, before you're going to any resources, you're just trying to spin around it and look at it from different angles on your own.
You know, and Rob would talk about that gem, you know, that you almost could like look at one word and almost move it, and mm-hmm. it would reflect and refract. You know, sometimes I feel like you definitely do that with a word or an idea, but I'm almost trying to do that with the text and see the movement. So, for instance, I go from Acts 1 to Acts 2, 120 to 3,000. And then I go to Paul in Ephesians 2 and start talking about the barrier between Jew and Gentile. And if you read that, you think in some ways it's such an ethereal, idealistic way of living, until you think of Acts 13, where Paul was in a room praying with Menahem, who was that foster kid that was brought into to Herod, brought up with Herod, and Lucius of Cyrene, you know, Simeon, Bartimaeus, John, Mark, and just thinking like, here's people from all over the world, you know, which is interesting because in the New Testament, they don't talk about this person's from this tribe or this person's from the son of this person. Right. They talk about this. And so right in there, you begin to see in Acts this whole movement of this is the ends of the earth and it's all coming together. And they were like a small group. They were praying, fasting, and that's where God called Barnabas and Saul out. So almost kind of looking and following and seeing a path almost building. And so then what I'll do is I'll take note cards and just start writing the ideas on the note cards. And I'll probably have between 25 and 30 note cards. And I'll just almost try to create a train track. And Rob was a master at this. He taught me how to do this. And then all of a sudden I would just put them in the order and I would start moving. No, that needs to be here. Or, dude, I need to eliminate this idea. But slowly but surely building my content arc outline in actual movable instead of just a Times New Roman document.
Right, right. So you, as you're capturing ideas, as you're starting to think about what you're going to do, do you just always have a little stack of note cards with you that you can write them down?
Yeah, some people have moleskins, but I've just been more note card oriented since then. So I'll always have, you know, note cards in my back pocket, and so I'm writing them down. And because you just never know when that idea is going to come. And all of a sudden, I just want to make sure that I have a place to capture it. And then bring it back to the pile, and then I'll just slowly look through it. In my office, if I was going to, obviously we're in my bedroom, but if we were in my office, I also even have like note card holders that are almost like a recipe box of just my ideas, and it's just in that, and then that, you know, this upcoming teaching on Colossians 1 or this upcoming teaching for the weekend on Ecclesiastes. It's, you'll almost see it kind of sectioned that way.
So at the end of the day, or maybe the beginning of the next day, you'll just pull out this little stack of note cards out of your pocket and file them in the right place. Nice.
And constantly just trying to look through it and just go, okay, is that really the best path? Is that really the best thing? What's it missing? And then, which is so fun, is then you take this to a coffee shop, and I'll have them in my back pocket, and I've probably given this message already to 15 or 20 people just through the note cards. Okay, so I'm going to, and I just lay them all out. This is what I'm thinking. Would you move anyone? Would you? And I think it feels really interactive for people when they're hearing it. It allows people to go, no, I'd take that one out, or that one was really a bit fuzzy. It feels pretty collaborative and fun. But then also it helps me memorize my transitions and my points and like the chunks that I'm kind of going to be sitting in and when I teach.
So let's say 3 months ago, you knew that you were going to teach this weekend. And so you start, you know, you make a little space in your note card holder for together week one. And you just start capturing note cards and dropping them in. I almost just threw my pen across the room. Because I'm gesturing like you do when you're talking into a microphone that nobody can see. So now you've got this stack. At what point, like how far before you're actually going to preach it, do you start pulling out these note cards and start trying to make sense of the stack?
So You know, I also will have like a Word document and a folder that will be, you know, the Together series, week one, week three. Those are the two that I'm up. I'll be anything that I'm reading, I'll dump into there, but there will be a point where there's an idea, a phrase, community animated by hope. I mean, that came out of Brian Walsh's Colossians remix. And I just like that sound. I'll just write down that phrase because that will remind me of his whole chunk about Colossians. I'll put that down, that phrase or that on a note card. And so what I'll end up doing is probably taking maybe the best 30 to 45 ideas in that I've dumped already into my Word document, put those down into note cards. And this is usually happening probably, I'd say, 2 to 3 weeks before I actually give the message. And so from there, then I'm starting to, almost like a stand-up comedian, kind of practicing a bit or practice an idea and practice the introduction, you know, hey, this is what happened, tell this story. Just watch people's expressions. Did people connect with that? Did people, you know, did people even add to it? And slowly just start whittling away and honing in on what's the best path possible for that message.
Okay, so does it really start to structure itself not in the Word document, but it's really coming together as you reorder the note cards?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's because that's where I think the soul comes out. The document's just information, you know, and I think for a long time, I was really good at transferring information from what I had put on my Word document and then got up on a Sunday morning and I transferred great information, but it wasn't speaking from a transformative place. And I think what was so beautiful, what I learned from Rob, was sit in it. Let it wreck you. Let it mess with you. Let the scriptures, I mean, we talk about the scriptures being in the inspired Word of God. We don't talk about it still being inspiring. Let it inspire you and remind you about the way of Christ. And so for me, that process is just this, what's inspiring me? What's going to inspire the community? What's going to serve them best in this? And there are times where I actually like an idea so much, but I go, that's not going to actually help them. That's just me wanting to come across, it's just me wanting to kind of share something exciting, but it will take us off the point of the message. So just save it for. And so even in the back file of that kind of recipe box, there's just ones of like, I can't wait for the day ideas to be able to share that. So.
Do you ever go back through those just to say what's in there, what's sparking your interest for someday?
Yeah, you know, I should do it more, but I probably like once every 2 months, you know, I'll go through that and kind of, you know, so.
All right, so where in this process, I'm running down a note of for something else I want to ask you here in a second, but where in this process do you start to bring in word studies and commentaries? And even this is where I like to get really nerdy, you know.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorites that you like to go to?
So with the Word document together, week one, that becomes a ground for anything I read. You know, I remember kind of early on in our internship with Rob, you know, he just said, hey, what are the questions that you ask of the text? You know, and I had maybe a few questions I asked, and I just remember he went on a rampage, and that sounds like anger, not anger or frustration. It wasn't that. It was just this, him just a barrage of great questions that I just started writing down. And so actually I have the document of the questions. I've saved it. Like, and these would be the questions that I just ask. So for me, like, what are the significant words? If they are Greek, what are the Hebrew equivalents? If they are Hebrew, what are the Greek equivalents? Are there words that share the same root as this word? Does this word have a picture or image or practice that it comes from? Are there any word plays, puns, or innuendos that come from this word? Where else is it used in the Bible? Where does it first occur, so that principle of first mention? Is it common? Is it rare? What does it tell me? And so it moves from words to places to the meta narrative to the tension. Then it moves to the whole teaching around the moment. And that became something for me that I would start there with the words. I had a professor, and he basically did an interlinear on the Greek New Testament at Hope. And I use that constantly, and I'll go through the Kittles, I'll go through the Browns, I'll go through the various different context books, commentaries, but I always want to start with me asking the questions. I think oftentimes we skip that part and we jump to hearing what a scholar has to say. But you're a scholar for your community. You know your community. They don't. And so I want to ask the questions that are going to be relevant and from our community and also responsible for the text. And then I'll jump in after that to kind of try and get some answers from during the word study or through those commentaries.
Yeah. And I'll say for full disclosure, I had the same New Testament professor you did at the same university a few years before you. So I know you're talking about Paul McReynolds. Interlinear. I'll link to that one. Would you be willing to send me that list of questions you asked that I can post it on there?
That's great.
Okay. Where does all this happen? When you're talking about you sit down, is it like, do you prefer to be in the quiet of your office? Do you like to do all this in a coffee shop? You know, JR last week talked about how he likes to do certain things in one place and certain things in another.
Yeah, I totally connect with JR in that. I like to do the Word document stuff, the study, the kind of the research. I love to do that in a quiet space. It just helps me. I'm too ADD. If I see something happening or someone's talking about fantasy football, I'm going to jump into that conversation. So for me to have Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday mornings from 7 to usually 11:30. That 4.5 hours is just protected to read, study, and brain dump and write messages. When it gets down to probably the last 3 weeks for a message, that's when I start getting the cards. That's when I start like bringing it in front of people. I start sharing it to the teams or the programming teams and slowly kind of having them just on individuals speak into it. And then one thing I started to do when I was leading Rock Harbor Fullerton, Fullerton was a college town, is on Saturday night before I gave the message, usually late at night, couldn't sleep, was a bit antsy. I'd go for a walk in downtown Fullerton and I would pray from our city and I just listen. But I'd also kind of be thinking about how does what I'm saying speak to that dude coming out of the bar and really speak to that relationship and speak to really the need of the city. And I think that prayer walk, it was a real soul stretching time for me, a way that once again got me out of, this is not about transferring information. This is about speaking to and from a transformative place. And so you got to make sure you have the stories and you've got like the life experience or are honest going, this is so difficult for me. This is a hard thing for me, as I can imagine for many of you. But it just seeing people late at night just gave me another element to remind myself who I'm speaking to either that next morning or that next night at our services.
So what does that look like in Barrington? Because I know that Barrington doesn't have downtown Fullerton, right, that I know of.
So, and I think we're actually, to be honest, I'm trying to figure that out, you know. But we're moving to this little house in downtown Barrington, and it's actually kind of, it's like Fullerton in the sense of just being really quaint, a couple of blocks, a lot of local business. And I think just to be present in there probably during the days, it's probably not going to be going off on a Saturday night, but I think a Friday afternoon, to walk, or a Saturday morning to walk through, that can be a good reminder. And the other thing I've been doing too is, I'm such an explorer and a learner, and realizing it doesn't matter if it's, studying fantasy football or studying the scriptures. I want to learn things. And there's 200 neighborhoods in Chicago. And so usually two Mondays a month, my wife and I and family were going to explore a new neighborhood. And seeing a new neighborhood, a new context, I'm learning about it, but I'm running it through the filter. How is what I'm going to share actually going to help this neighborhood? Or does this neighborhood even care? Do they even connect with it? So it's, I think for me, being intentional to step into other neighborhoods and kind of ask once again, and to kind of learn. I mean, there's a couple neighborhoods where they live together, and that's really inspiring for me, as I'm even crafting these 2 weeks of messages. Whether they're followers of Jesus or not, they get community. They love their city. They love their neighborhood. So that's another way to recreate what we did Saturday nights.
Well, I lose my attention like you do, because I want to chase down little side questions. So now I'll go back to the question that I asked a while ago, that then I chased other questions. But you talked about the interlinear and the word study tools. What are some other books and tools that you just find really valuable that you have to go back to time and again?
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to, there's like a list of them that are coming to my mind. One thing is I stopped buying commentary sets, and realized that, most guys who write a great commentary usually only write one great commentary. So if I'm doing a thing on, you know, 1 Corinthians, there's probably a couple of names that everyone says, you got to get their commentary. You got to get their commentary. So probably from a commentary thing on a book of the Bible, it's so all over the board.
Sure.
But I find myself coming back to a lot of the Jewish roots, the Brad Young's, you know, the parables of Jesus. I think some of even the Crossan, the Borgs, you know, there's stuff that what they're doing just from, man, I didn't know that about the city of Bethlehem, you know? So I'll remember a section on a place or on an idea from a different book. Obviously N.T. Wright, a lot of the stuff that he's done, it's just, even his latest commentaries on, it's just so practical for every believer. I just love reading, because it's just something different. And so a lot of the context and then a lot of it's just so accessible online, you know, just even for pictures of the place. I love trying to see the cities, and a lot of schools like the University of Michigan. I did a message on Pisidian Antioch. The University of Michigan is really raised up a grant since 1940 where they're doing the archaeology of that city. So in contact, like trying to connect with professors there and trying to see what they've posted at their library. So it really often depends just on the text that I'm studying. But I'll just kind of track down who's a leader in that idea, in that place, in that kind of text.
And do you find you get good response to that?
It's funny. If you send an email, most people respond pretty quickly. I mean, this one lady, she wrote about the Roman triumph. And I found her email online. I sent her an email, and she's like, well, call me. And so I bought her book. I had read about the triumph, and just I was preparing for this message. And we had a great 45-minute conversation. And it was like she was just giving footnote after footnote after footnote about the idea of triumph. And I don't even think she was a believer, but I was kind of just trying to learn from her. And what I realized is people want to talk about the things that they spend in their life to, you know, and I mean, and I've probably called maybe too many people, and some probably there was a joke that my friends in college had. I would just call Dallas Willard every time I came into my apartment in college. Mm-hmm. And he had a restraining order against me. But I had a couple of conversations with him. But yeah.
I emailed him one time, and I was shocked by how fast I got a response.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to backtrack to this other question that I wrote down. You know, you talk about you take the note cards and you line them out and figure out just what works. Do you find, maybe consciously or maybe unconsciously, you see this in retrospect, but is there a particular structure that you tend to follow and how you order your thoughts that you see or anything like that?
That's a great question. Part of it for me depends on who am I as the teacher. So sometimes you're kind of teaching as a tour guide. Let me take you to this place. Sometimes you're teaching as, hey, let me give you an answer to what I believe about this question or this idea. Sometimes you're speaking as an explorer, kind of saying, hey, I just feel this is important for our community. So for me, sometimes it's what hat am I wearing as I prepare the message that sets up. And then I feel probably most comfortable when I can start off with a story. I love telling stories. And so if I can in some way create tension with the story that needs to be resolved, Andy Stanley is, I think, a master at this, you know, in his communicating for change. But he'll start off with a story, ask a question, go to the Bible. What does this mean for you? What does it mean for us? I'm probably not that succinct, but I think that there is something about where do you introduce tension into the message, and then how do you resolve that tension? Do you resolve it? Do you keep the tension and go, now go discuss this in your small groups? You know, I always thought that the sermon was supposed to be the final word. And, you know, Rob is pretty blatant that it should start the conversation and it should carry on through the rest of the week. You should have people around a water cooler going, what do you think he meant by that? What does that mean? So I think there's some beauty there. And I think his abilities to create more tension and have people wondering and searching and seeking, far exceeds, my abilities and pay grade. But like, I want people to be able to sit with it and wrestle with it. So, usually story to text, usually to a question and then to a final charge. That's kind of been what I've done. So,
but it's not as if you start to put your note cards in stacks of, right?
Because Acts is like a narrative book. I mean, it's hard to do that. I want to be so true to what the text is saying. And then if you're doing a topical, that's different. So, you probably have more freedom to create it in a way that you want. So I think because I go back from Wednesdays to a weekend, it really depends on that context. And then, from that, what's going to serve that, our community best.
Got it. Okay. So as we're recording this, it's Friday. And you're preaching Sunday morning. So we've talked about taking all those note cards, and then what's the final process from you've ordered those note cards to what are you going to carry with you on Sunday morning? Is it a manuscript? Do you outline? What does all that look like?
So I'm almost done with the manuscript, but I feel like I already know it. I've done so many walks saying it, and now it's just kind of wordsmithing the phrases and the words. I'll manuscript it out, and then I won't. It's just basically another way for me to internalize it. I won't take the notes up there. Usually, what I'll take up there, if anything, is maybe one note card that just reminds me of the 12 note cards that I put, and it's just one word that reminds me. And then usually, if you were to see my Bible, I'm sorry, it's not here, but I will circle certain words that will trigger a note card for me. So when I'm going through it, I go, oh yeah, that thing triggers this note card. So that's just another way that for me to cheat and kind of keep it, keep me connected to the path that I had created.
Yeah. So. Have you always done it that way?
I think that being at Mars, nobody used notes, you know. Rob just said you don't pull out notes when you share about your wedding story. You tell it, you know. And so it was always a little bit of the challenge of this was a way that made me realize I understood and I knew the text. I've gotten to a point now where I probably wouldn't be as like, oh, notes are bad. I think when I was young, I was like, ah, why do people use notes? You know, watching Bill manuscripts everything, and he can read with such a charge and authority that's so, I've never seen anything like it. But there's also been people who don't use notes, and I listen to him and I go, I wish you would have manuscripted that. I wish you would have read it. You would have been much more clear. The path would have been stronger. And I'll sometimes listen to people who manuscript and I go, I wish you would have just stepped away from the podium and let us see your heart. So, I'm just gotten to the point where there isn't really one way, but you just got to do, what you do best. And for me, that's this.
And that word is enough for you. You've never really been in a setting where you're up there and you see that word on a note card and you go, what did that mean? You've never lost your place.
Oh no. You know, the fun thing is, and, I remember when I was in college, I got the chance to go to San Diego to a National Pastors Conference. And I was sitting, you know, Rob had invited me to go, and I was sitting with Irwin and Francis Chan, which is just awesome, awesome in itself. And the three of them are talking, and I'm just like a fly on the wall. And Francis asks a great question. Have you ever been in a moment when you're teaching and it's as if a new idea, like the Spirit gives you a new idea. it's as if like the Spirit gives you this new idea and you trust it and it takes the whole sermon to another level. And Irwin just looks at him and goes, you know why that happens. You know why that happens. And Francis is like, I don't know. And at this moment, I'm grabbing a napkin because I just know like Irwin's going to say something. Truth. And Irwin just said, when you prepare, you give the Spirit more freedom to move. And I just think that's such a powerful, like that was a moment, a defining moment for me in regards to teaching, that there will be some times that where I will be in it and I'll just go, oh, I don't have that word memorized or underlined or highlighted. There's something that's happening with that word in this service for this room. And I trust it. And that helps me. When I manuscript, I don't leave my notes. But when I underline or circle a word, I might miss it once, but there's always a way you can get back to it. Or what I find more often than not is another idea pops in for that service that it's able to, I think, take the teaching to hopefully another level.
So this weekend you're preaching. How many times will you preach? How many services?
Times. Three? Saturday night and then two on Sunday morning.
So how different will the second Sunday morning message be from the first Saturday?
Well, Saturday night is probably our, you know, a lot of the Wednesday night is a lot of the core. 11:15 is a lot of explorers, a lot of, and the room's probably 60 to 70% filled on Saturday. And then it's probably 95% filled on 11:15. So it's just the energy is a little bit different. You know, on Saturday night, they're just like, let's get into this. Where are you going? We're with you. 11:15, you know, you've got so many people are coming in for the first time to a church or stepping back into a church for the first time. So I think it's different in tone and posture. You can make a stronger charge, I think, sometimes on Saturday night than you can on 11:15. But I think you're trying to, I think, paint a picture for the 11:15 for them to go, I want in. I want it. This is the best kind of life, you know. And I think for the Saturday night, the majority of them are like, we know. Just tell us what you want us to do, you know. So just, I think that's nuanced a little bit different for me and my prep. So.
This is where it makes me wonder if I should do video, because seeing your eyes light up and you actually leaned in toward the screen when you said, I went in. one or two more questions, we'll wrap up. But you talked about, you know, you've talked a lot just about a lot of the experiences you've had, and you've had some great opportunities in different settings with Mike Erie and Rob Bell and Bill Hybels and a napkin conversation with Erwin McManus. Aside just from some of those great experiences, are there other resources that have been helpful for you in just forming who you are as a preacher, forming your style and all that? Or has that mostly just been on the job learning? Like, are there books that you return to or that kind of thing?
Yeah. That's a great question. There's a food network show. Alden Brown, Good Eats.
Yeah.
I feel like that's who I want to be as a preacher. I mean, if you ever watch that show, he gives you the history of how they started cooking lamb.
Yeah.
He gives you the first people who discovered it. He takes you on a journey, and then he like cooks a meal and you eat together. I remember watching that in my friend's living room and just going, the way that they have art that, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
So I feel like there are storytellers that I find myself coming back to. So one is what we do when we write sermons is it's an art form, you know? So Stephen Pressfield's The War of Art.
Yeah,
I come at probably twice, three times a year. But it's also so deeply formational. So I go back to Parker Palmer, Let Your Life Speak. Henry Nouwen, you know, and then I find myself like I probably read Divine Conspiracy once a year. I just need to be reminded of the kingdom. So there's probably a handful of books that I read on a regular basis, and some get added into that, and some seem to stay. But for me, that's been a really helpful thing, and resources that I find myself coming back to often.
Yeah. Well, last question. Well, last. I'll have one more after this. But what is something that you feel like you just have to talk about that I haven't asked about? Like, what is there anything outside the norm or anything, you know, you've found or you're passionate about in terms of your whole process that you just think, oh, I want to have a chance to talk about this? Didn't prep you for this question, huh?
Yeah, that's good. I mean, I think that what we do is really, really important. And I think it's also probably not as important as we make it. It's important that we share truth, but sometimes I think we stress ourselves way, 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 way too much. And so I think trying to find that healthy tension, and I think that really comes through rhythms of prayer and Sabbath, really meeting with people who are smarter than you, who can ask you really hard questions, and really being true to who you are. Like I said earlier in the interview, I feel like there's an explorer in me. If I'm not finding new music, if I'm not going to a new place, if I'm not experiencing a new meal, something inside me dies. Mm-hmm. And now I have to be sober of too much stimulation because I can just be scattered all over the place. But to give myself some space just to play on a Monday morning, go into this neighborhood, study it, research it, has nothing to do with teaching, but it has everything to do with the type of person I want to be. I want to learn. I want to experience. So for me, that's important. That's just important for me because I think if not, you'll find yourself – I have a friend who lives out in the West, one of those like Idaho, like Colorado, Wyoming estates, and he bales hay. And he does it, and he's just incredible at it. And that's all he's ever known until someone came and said that there's oil underneath. And now they're drilling for oil, and he's not really baling hay anymore. So I feel like for me, I constantly want to make sure that I'm not just stuck doing one practice when there's a whole other world within me that needs to be tapped. There's a whole other reality around me that I'm not searching and seeking out to learn about. So it's just something that my wife and I have been really committed to. She's an artist, so she's just taught me a ton about that. So I would want to push that on. Nice. Or into that reality. So,
well, and I think that I listened to, just to make sure I was kind of in touch with your style. I've certainly heard you preach before, but I listened to one of your recent, I think it was Acts 17 that you did Wednesday night. I guess a few months ago. And it's still something I've always known about you. But what you just described about yourself, it comes out. And so this joy and love that you have for learning comes out in how you teach, which is a beautiful thing.
Thanks.
So for people who want to keep up with you, you're on Twitter. What's your Twitter name?
At Steve Ryan Carter. Everyone named their child, I think, Steve Carter, so at the middle name.
All right. I'll include links to some of the Willow podcasts if anybody wants to hear how you preach. Anything else? Any place else you can be found online? You're not blogging or anything like that, are you?
Oh, not yet. Hopefully in the coming months we'll do that. But I would say, you know, anytime if anyone wants to shoot me an email, scarter@willowcreek.org. You know, you can call me at my office or shoot me an email or I love talking about these kinds of conversations and however I can be a help. It's one of my favorite things is when someone calls from, you know, Illinois or Indiana or some random place, and you just get to have a conversation and kind of hear what they're thinking about. And even last week, I got to talk with someone in California and just watch them rearrange their message, you know, using the note cards thing. And I'm just excited to listen to their talk. So I love these kinds of conversations, so we're accessible to people. So
nice. Well, Steve, thanks a lot.
Thank you, John. Thank you.
I knew having you on would make my job really easy.
I'm not sure about that, but man, it's really fun I'm really glad that you started this conversation, because even just listening to JR and hearing his process, it was like really practical to go, I could do that.
Yeah.
I can do that. And sometimes when you're alone in your own office, you go, I'm sure that these people, like, they've got it down. What am I doing? I should, you know, and all of a sudden all the voices start coming in like, I shouldn't be doing this. But to hear and be a part of this conversation and recognize everyone's got their own unique process, and we can learn from each other's process, and it's only going to help us get better. So I love it, and I'm excited to continue listening on and learning from your people that you got planned to interview.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you, my friend.
Blessings to you.
Yep.